tell us. Share. Okay. Do share.
But I want to know, right? I want to know. You said he ain't get the paper, the plan or something by March or something like that.
But tell us, share with us what he said.
But I want to know. Huh?
Share with us what he said.
All right.
Or your interpretation of what he said.
Okay. He said that the, let me read it here. Mm-hmm. A decision could soon be made on the first phase of the building of islands off the shores of Barbados.
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, but we have given the assurance that residents will have a say in the planned development and that the beaches will remain public.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I am expected to have in my hands the report on phase 1B of the islands by the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a conversation with Barbados about what that should look like.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says the government of Barbados does not intend to carry any debt for this. So mm-hmm. I want to know now if who will own these islands,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know like if they be like you know like in Barbados with these big hotels and so on. If they've got big hotels and so on,
mm-hmm.
are they looking at the hurricane season, like when you if they build these things, they call it, as you said, there will be about 3 islands,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I know Barbados is a small country. So I'm looking at the hurricane season, like rain, the water, if they're going to build all these hotels in the sea or whatever we're doing in the sea, rain, the water and have points out some other place to go, and then people that are on islands will be flat out then, call the water and be looking for somewhere else to go. Like barely all 3 islands in the ocean.
Well, is that, and together with a very good insurance package, I would imagine. I can't speak to it because I really didn't see it. I mean, I know you read from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have to research what he said pertaining to that whole setup. But personally, a person like me who can't swim,
mm-hmm.
I like my St. George and St. Thomas very well, so that in case there's a storm surge, obviously, I would imagine that those islands that you speak of would be the mm-hmm. first to be impacted before it gets to
but I mean,
the shores.
But if they go and build big hotels in the sea and all this kind of things in the sea, we that on land, well, when they got the hurricane, they got bad weather, all that water will come out and we will be flat out.
It pushes the water somewhere else. And water is smart. It'll find ways and means to get somewhere else.
But it will come on island.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not the expert on it, on that. I know that if you take a drone shot of Barbados before and you look at it now, the shape may not be entirely the same. We have to be mindful of all of the construction on the beaches and pushing things back and shoving something here and there and changing the whole landscape of how the island actually looks or shapes.
I want to know who will own these islands, because you know who will own the islands, because you said that the government will be taking on debt, and what kind of law that will put down for the people that out in the sea.
Well, good questions. This is Miss Undecided, right?
Yes, that's my birthday.
Oh, dear, a happy birthday in advance. How old will you be? You want to listen? Sure. How old are you going to be? 20?
Huh?
Are you going to be like 20?
I'll be sweet as hell.
But are you going to be 20? Are you turning into your 20s now?
No.
Well, do share. I swear you're going to be turning 20.
Pardon me?
I thought you would be turning at least 20 by now.
No, I would turn you off. Yeah, I'm not 20.
Oh, younger than that?
No, I'm older than that.
Oh, okay. Well, you are, this is January 31st.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
the best month of the year.
Well, it's a good thing that you were delivered then. It could have been the end of February, knowing that this is a leap year, you'd be in trouble, knowing which date it is that you were born. But I want to know, on a serious note, blessings to you, much blessings to you on your special day.
Yeah.
And may God continue to richly bless you over and over and over again for many, many more years to come.
Yeah, thank you. But I still worry about these offshore islands. Right, but I can't.
Well, I
still
think,
worry about
be honest with you, and I can't tell you what to worry about. make mm-hmm. sure that you wake up and you see the sunrise tomorrow first thing before you worry about the islands outside of Barbados. Make sure that you wake up tomorrow, and I know you will, and give thanks for another year, okay? And then we can worry about the islands coming out of the ocean, all right? But a serious note, I really want to wish you well. It was always a pleasure hearing you, and you were the first female caller for the day. Hopefully you won't be the last. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 7 minutes after one. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to the listeners and Mr. Johnson. Greetings to you all. Yesterday afternoon, while listening to VOB 92.9 newscast, we hear some news that wasn't welcoming, but we had to have it anyhow. The region is due for an 8.0 earthquake. And then on top of that, it touched on the point that the world is on a half alert due to the coronavirus virus. Coronavirus. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And these two natural disasters, we could see, are cause for some concern. Because the area has been getting some regular attacks or regular tremors. And the experts have come to a conclusion that we expect a big one. Some 2,000 years ago, there are some men that had similar concerns. And they asked questions. And one of the questions they asked was, teacher, when will these things occur, actually be? And what will be the sign when these things are to occur? And then he said to them, nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be great earthquakes, and will be pestilences and food shortages in many areas. It is noteworthy, Ms. Hague and listeners, mm-hmm. that these things are happening at these times.
You think these are the last days?
Well, this is at least where I'm getting there now. Mm-hmm. That they are pointing to a specific time. I say that to say this. Some people might say, man, that's a coincidence. Or say, well, no, we got technology that we can actually record these incidents. But let's ask the question then. When is they had the technology, what was the one that happened before? And then you have to answer that, Mr. Egan, listeners. We had yellow fever, cholera, and then the weather wants we know now, Zika, AIDS, etc. And it is interesting also to note, back in the 60s and the 70s, when the older ones were going to church and saying, well, these things are happening, the signs weren't evident. But now those people have died. And this present generation today, no, you see any signs, these ones don't read the Bible. Because I hear them on this radio station, well, not I was so frequent, and on the streets when I have to talk to them. Man, I've got no time for the Bible, no, man. These different things. There's an old book that written was an old many years ago, that used to wear sandals. And the signs are there. And I hear you say something in your opening preamble about fear. Mm-hmm. I just want to read something to you, right? Mm-hmm. Just give me a moment. Also, there will be signs in the sun and moon and stars and on the earth, anguish of the nations not knowing the way out because of the roaring of the sea and its agitation. People will become faint out of fear. An expectation of the things coming upon the inhabited earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. I would like the listeners to pay attention to what is going on around them and do not dismiss this as a bare coincidence. These are perilous and critical times we are living in, and a time will come when all of this that is causing havoc among humankind will be finish, but you have to pay attention. if you want to survive in this end time. So just pause there now.
I want to agree. Listen, I always say that I am not a Christian. I don't know what being a Christian means, truthfully, but I believe in God. And I believe in living the way, as best as I can, because I'm not perfect. Lord knows that. But I try my best to acknowledge he had a son who came down to show us how to live. And that's what I teach my children. If my children decide that they want to choose a religion, that's up to them. But what you were saying, in my opinion, is quite true. I don't know if you get the feeling, and I don't know if people share this with me. They said time is relative, yes. You could be on an airplane going to England, and it feels like forever, 8 hours. But yet still, you could be doing something else, and the day runs quickly. But regardless, I just feel like time has just speeded up. You know, 24 hours just don't feel like 24 hours anymore. And I don't know who God is, or what he looks like, but I believe he's closely associated with something called time. Because this is the one thing that none of us can change, freeze, reverse, fast forward, and everything we do, including the very thing called fear and death, nobody wants it to happen. We know it will, but everybody is doing everything possible to avoid it or prolong it, prolong the life as much as they can. And so what you're saying with the Bible, I welcome. Maybe not everyone will welcome it. That's okay too. And but I do believe that these may be, you know, the last days. And to me, the only hope we have is really through the Almighty. And that's just my humble opinion. We'll be back after the break.
The latest health updates on health-related events and developments.
The World Health Organization meets today to discuss whether the coronavirus constitutes a global health emergency. An action that would imply that the situation is serious enough to warrant immediate international action.
A week ago, the WHO convened a meeting of its emergency committee, but was unable to make a decision as to whether the virus would be classified as an emergency. Director of the WHO, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, says it was still a bit too early to consider making the spread of the disease a public health emergency of international concern.
There are many unknowns to address in this event, including clinical severity and the true extent and nature of disease transmission. Communicating critical risk and event information to all communities is the responsibility of everybody, our member states, the media and WHO, and we at this time must particularly counter misinformation that may affect people's behaviour.
That's The Latest Health, a production of the Starcom Network.
Welcome back. I want to read this WhatsApp quickly. Joanne, I am afraid of this coronavirus. I work in the hotel industry and we are in contact with tourists daily. What kind of screening are we going to do or have to protect the citizens? I live at home with a senior citizen and a baby. Both are vulnerable. What else can I do to safeguard them other than hand washing? What is government really doing to protect us? The reason I read that, and is not to open up the discussion, is to say that on Sunday, I believe that RASTAX will have a team of individuals who can speak to this topic in greater detail with a level of accuracy. And I'm hoping that you all tune in to get some information as to what the government will do, if God forbid. And so that Barbadians will know, okay, how to prepare. It's hard, but I'm sure that there's a plan. And if there is, tune in on Sunday so that plan can be shared and some of your questions can then be answered by some medical experts. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, sorry, this is me again.
Me again?
I know it's not going to call the radio station that often, but...
That's okay. You know, I like hearing you too. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. All right, love. Thank you so much. The coronavirus. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of panic going on the coronavirus that we need to really clear up a bit. And there are quite a few WhatsApp messages going around explaining this thing. If you were to look on your Lysol can, mm-hmm. you're going to see that one of the things that Lysol is supposed to protect against is the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. That has not been something new. It's right there on your Lysol can.
It is, Gabby, but the thing is, because it's the virus itself is somewhat like a new strain, it's not behaving like the typical coronavirus from the family of coronaviruses.
I know, Jala, most of these viruses, they mutate, they change all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, whether it be SARS, Ebola, whichever one.
MERS, Korea, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, all of them, they mutate because they don't want to be caught. They almost behave like they have brains.
Mm-hmm.
So all we need to do is to track it, and we have the expertise, I don't mean we Barbados, the world, to track these viruses all the time. And some of these viruses are man-made.
If not all.
I remember many, many years ago when I was living in the United States, they were talking about the people who they deliberately put certain viruses in certain black neighborhoods and so on, so that it could affect the black population.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that something went wrong in China with somebody somewhere decided, you know what, it's time for these here to have something like this to deal with. The Chinese had the dogs hang up, and the fastest thing that went were the dogs, right? For us now, we say, oh my God, it's so inhumane. But that's because we have a different culture. So when they say eat mice or rats or bats, it don't look strange to them. It's not unusual. It's not that they're being wicked or something like that. It's their culture. That's how we eat congers or we eat snake or we eat monkey or we eat, you know, other things that they would not eat.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was in Botswana, I went to a function at the University of Botswana that the president had invited us to. And they served worms. And these worms were there. They had separated the fish and the beef and the different things. But the first thing the Botswanans went for were these worms. They looked something like caterpillars. Locusts or what they call the thing. And they went really fast because that's a delicacy for them. So, you know, we shouldn't be believing the thing that, oh, the virus came because of the meat and all that. There's something else going on, in my opinion, on this coronavirus.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brass Stacks, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Egg.
Hi, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I'm well as well.
Good.
I'm Janice, I suppose. I've been looking at that piece of rock for a long time. That area in Rendezvous, as well as the one there at Bishop Court Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Your caller, about three callers ago, I think he was on for a long run, and it was a good run. And I would like to endorse practically all, if not all, of what he said. And this has to do with the tourism. Years ago, I was locked in discussion with Noel Lynch, then minister, and I told them you've got to be very careful how the very thing that we are trying to achieve, which is the U.S. dollar, the efficiency with which we are doing it is not decreasing. Because sadly, tourism is in itself a consumer of foreign exchange, of the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we climb and try to achieve, the more it is slipping away from us. And the thing about it is if you have neighboring or other destinations with devalued currency, people will always hold the sword of Damocles over your head and say, look, you don't know, we could go somewhere else cheaper. And there's always the other side of it, that people are always saying, or tourists are always saying, oh, we would like to see something new. And you move off to do something new. So in truth and in fact, it is the efficiency of the U.S. dollar. I don't know if anybody has done a study, I suppose they have, to show us really and truly where we are. The other thing that he was talking about is the carrying cost. The carrying cost is like the pressure And you dealt with an admin an outfit that looked at pressure and force, and you know that once the force builds up, the pressure builds up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the force of bringing more and more people, especially if you're going to be locating them in any defined locus, is going to put pressure on it economically, sanitation wise, sewage wise, you name it. So the very thing that we might be trying to achieve, we may be moving away. Look at Trinidad. Trinidad has one big spinner a year, and that's tourism. That is carnival. England doesn't advertise that it is a tourist destination, but they don't seem to be changing and swapping and changing. This whole talk about being following the carbon footprint, I spoke to it already, and my biggest contribution to this is Barbados is small, and I think we are getting too caught up in certain areas of this carbon footprint. We are blessed with good northeasterly trades. We are blessed with the fact that we can produce sugar cane. Now, the sugar cane plant, and I can't stress it enough, is the prime engine for converting that gas that everybody, not that everybody, that we are all concerned about, that's CO2. And the sweeter our sugar cane, the faster it is removing it. The faster it is removing it, the more rum we could produce, the more sugar we could produce. So when we come to sit down and talk with all the big shot fellas, all we got to tell them is, look, put your money where your mouth is. Give us some more money to resuscitate the industry, to plant a few more acres, to double, maybe even to quadruple. The next thing I've been hearing, Mr. Barrow's thoughts, people trying to get into Mr. Barrow's thoughts and interpretation. I lived in a Barbados with Mr. Barrow, and Mr. Barrow came over to me as a very simple man, a man who drove an old Mercedes for years, and a man who seemed to like to live in fairly humble surroundings, a man who, for all the structures, and it is for that reason that I think Mr. Barrow would kick up water if you were to see how we are now just tearing down and ripping down. And what came home very forcefully to me yesterday evening, I was on the Kalamara area, and one of those massive light and power, it looked a fairly new truck to me, was coming down Kalamara. And I said to myself, my God, how would this negotiate a fire tender, heavily laden, coming down on the opposite side? And I said to myself, well, if in the evening an ambulance coming from in that area has to veer and sort of like meander in and out of traffic to get to the hospital, this seems to me a retrograde act and a no-no to take the fire service to the area in which it is being proposed. And I am very firm on that, because if you follow all the fires, even the international fire they had there, not international, the one in London, the other day in the Grenfell area, the Grenfell fire, you would see that the first thing in a report is something called response time. And Ms. Haig, I saw one of the worst fires in all my life as a student at Harrison College. Just behind the wall, there was a garage there. And that garage, a fire was parked by the oxyacetylene flame. You know the thing that the fellas do the welding with?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that went off about this time in the afternoon, between 1 and 2. And Joanne, you should have seen, that was mayhem. Every so many minutes, you could hear another explosion, a car explode, a cylinder explode, gas burning. And I don't think there is another fire service in the world that could have brought that fire under control. They were there in short space of time, and they contained it. At that time, you wouldn't have been at school yet. At that time, there was still a housing area there where the Central Bank is, the old church village village area. Not a house was lost. It was contained.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, ever since then, it is about containment. But the older I got and the more I learned, it has to do with flammability. It has to do with heat. And pray God, I would hate to know that our fire service is located in the Pines. That's there in Prince Gaff. I know it well. I take that route. So I twice a day.
But let me ask you something, though.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Bridgetown is the only densely populated area in St. Michael?
Let's back up there. I'm glad I served that ball, and I can play it.
Mm-hmm.
Bridgetown, every major city has virtually a dedicated fire service. Why? Because it's okay to people say, oh, nobody don't live in there anymore. Every day between 6 to 6, Bridgetown's population goes up tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Vehicles go up 20, 50-fold. So it is a focal point for conflagration. Pray tell me, if you were to have a fire, like at that place, what you call it, the foam house.
Mm-hmm.
You know the foam house?
Mm-hmm.
Or any department that carries a lot of fabric up Old Street. The reason with that fire in Grenfell was the material in which it was cladded and the kind of materials that we carry in our houses nowadays. Everything is combustible, highly combustible. And the location, Miss Haig, is not one for driving through town, but it is a strategy of driving across town and jumping over street. But you just sit down and think of it.
No, I'm not. I'm not saying. What I'm saying is that the response time, of course, is critical. But the response time is always critical.
It's like a heart attack. If you could give Dennis I would prefer you give Dennis a cuff in his chest. If you could give Dennis a cuff in his chest within the first 2 minutes or so of what he thinks is a heart attack, that is so vital in his recovery. If you can get to that fire within 3 minutes, every 3 minutes, mm-hmm. every 5 minutes.
But what I'm saying is, in my opinion, if I, you know, looking down the road, I personally think that St. Michael should have more than one fire service because it's fairly big and it's heavily populated. That's one, number one. It could be argued that the people in the Pine may say, well, you know, it's closer to us. And it could be argued where the people in town say, well, it's closer to us. The point is the response time is important. And I believe that the fire service themselves would make that determination if they feel it is adequate enough in choosing their temporary home.
But Ms. Haig, we all went to school and we were taught to think and to be rational. The St. Michael, the city fire service will serve the city and other areas. This would be dedicated as opposed to one for other areas and the city. As I said to you, the city is the throb and the heartbeat of a country. I wouldn't take up any more of your time.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joanne.
Good afternoon.
I would just like to say something, please.
Sure, go ahead. Second lady caller.
Thank you. Now, I had a problem here with bottle gas, the 25-pound bottle gas.
Mm-hmm.
I now get to understand they're changing the heads on the bottles. And I never heard it on the radio. I never heard it on TV. 4 bottles before to fit. The bottle head fit, but the stove is not burning. Neither offer electricity nor matches. So if I understand the changing the heads, if they're changing the heads, they should notify the people. And however they change the heads, we have to buy the heads. And I understand now a head for $55. 4 bottles before I get a bottle. These things ain't fair.
So that's from when? They change it already or effective when?
No, I had a bottle here that went out on Christmas week.
Mm-hmm.
I put on the head on the bottle and the stove isn't burning. Neither off electricity. It burns off electricity and off of matches.
Mm-hmm.
A good thing I had another bottle. And it fit that head. Now I get 4 bottles changed, not burning. until they get the fifth bottle. And now I understand that the heads are changing. Why they ain't notified the people? And now a head for $55. Now, if my head fit in the bottle, it's not burning, they're changing the bottles, we should be getting the heads free. We shouldn't have to pay so much money now for a bottle, eh? These things aren't fair.
I can agree with what you're saying, truthfully. And in the part about not notifying, but I'm glad that you shed some light on this, because those who did not know, hopefully when they're listening, they know now. But you need to be very careful. And that's the other thing, too. Why would they not notify gas bottles? And
right,
it's not something you should play with.
It's not
nothing you should play with. And
only now, yesterday, I understand the change in head. Mm-hmm. My head fit the bottles, but the stove are not burning. Four bottles. And it only burned on the fifth bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Now I understand the heads, the change in the heads. What is the price of the head now? I will have to give $55 now for head and put down a good head that working.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're changing the heads, they should notify the customers, the mm-hmm. government, the public,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And they should be giving us a head free.
Well, I agree. I can't say I disagree with that. I don't think that's unreasonable. Hopefully they're listening, and maybe someone can communicate a little bit more as to what the whole setup is and what they plan to do, because I think it's fair, basically what you're asking for. Some information, and not only that, $55 seems a little steep too for a head. All right, but thanks so much for calling. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome back. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Joanne.
Oh, third lady. I was kind of wondering where all my girls at. All these male callers all morning. How are you doing?
I am doing fine. How are you and the kids?
No, they're great. Thanks. They're great.
Oh, good. As long as they're great, I know you're okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm okay because I just finished talking to Dennis. So, you know, that lights up my day right there, you know? I was in a little bit of a down mood, but once I heard Dennis on the phone, hey.
You kind of wiped him out a little bit because he's got his head slumped over. Seems as if you tired him out in a good way, I hope.
Oh, that's my special person. So are you.
Thank you.
Joanne, I have to get very serious with you today.
Mm-hmm.
I consider the police force an essential service in this country. I think our Attorney General needs to take a little walk down to the Central Police Station and witness for what I witnessed on Saturday. Many of our young police officers are working under the most deplorable conditions. I had to go in there on Saturday afternoon. I didn't have much time because I was meeting someone to give me a lift home. I went in to ask for some information. There was a handsome, and I mean handsome, young man working at the front desk. There was someone who had come in with a complaint. That young man was forced to take all the calls that were coming in while he's writing out a police report with this woman. This is not fair.
Mm.
No wonder. He was inundated with calls. About 10 calls came in while he was trying to write out a police report with this woman. I believe in multitasking for certain jobs, but not for that. It's an essential service. They should have a receptionist in there. She doesn't even have to be a police officer. When people come in off the street, to deal with them in a separate room. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, and I felt so bad for him. I said, oh, God, I would have walked out of this job on day one if I was assigned to that desk. And, you know, he tried to keep his cool. And you get impatient because I was there for 20 minutes, and it was him trying to get her story. It was no longer confidential because it was in front of me, so I know everything that he wrote down in that complaint. I know the name of the business, the person. I know the street. I know the address. I know her business. That should have been done in a confidential area, away from the public. And why should he have these two jobs? This is taking advantage. No wonder they're having a hard time finding people to serve as police officers. Mm-hmm. Joanne, have a good day.
Before you go, one other thing I wanted to mention to, now that you're talking about doing things away from the public, I have a serious problem with the way how pharmacies are set up in this country. There's absolutely no privacy whatsoever. Nope. You're standing there, and all the pharmacists listening right now, you're standing there and you're asking for X, Y, or you're trying to describe what's going on with you. And someone is to your left, someone is behind you, someone's to your right. And then they bring out this and then ask the pharmacist, do you have any of, you know, so-and-so? I really think that we need to look at that. I think that pharmacies right now, we need to have some privacy. Maybe we're dealing with our medical issues in the same way when we go to a doctor's office. He doesn't diagnose us in front of everybody. So
exactly. You know, they should have a little room on this side. But they don't, you know, a lot of times the way we treat our own people tells us exactly how they take care of the people's business. Sometimes you feel they don't care about you. They really don't care and respect us. I felt so sorry for that police officer that I walked out after 20 minutes of waiting. And he kept looking over at me and saying, I'll be soon with you, miss. I said, soon? I'm out of here. You know, I'm out of here.
Okay.
You know, and because I don't have that kind of patience. And I didn't blame it on him. I said, how can they have a young... crap.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Well, always respect due to the police officers. We do admire and we feel sorry for them some days because with the situation with the crime, they're busy.
They're very, very busy.
And they must be tired.
They can get on the street. They can get any civilian. A lot of young girls don't have jobs in this country. A lot of young men don't have jobs. Put them in there and let them do that. Let them greet the people as they come in and give a call to an officer in a back room, a private back room, to take their complaints away from the public.
Yeah. No, I'm with you with that. There needs to be a level of privacy there. And the pharmacies do as well. Let's throw that one in there, too.
I salute our firemen and our police today. And we need a special day for both of them.
Absolutely.
Have a good day, Joanne.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 146. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, go ahead.
Zig?
Yes, this is Ms.
Okay,
Haig.
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad.
Good.
It's something I want you to check for me, Ms. Haig.
Oh, dear, what's
that? I believe that you find out things very quick, so I will understand.
Me? we will try our best here on Brass Tacks.
I don't know. Something I saw for a while now, and I expect was to hear somebody call and ask a question. But by I hear nobody, I decide to take it on myself to do it. A lot of the bus shed, Ms. Haig, just take off with the bench that the aging people, when they are at the bus stop 2 hours, can't find a bus. Where they can help their legs sit down on a bench or something. Ms. Haig, a lot of these things, the shed, both the shed and the bench, just move. They take them away.
And where is this? Where was this?
Partly a lot of places in Barbados.
If I may add, on Sunday, with a commuter advocacy program that we do, I went to St. Lucie. Good afternoon to the good people of St. Lucie and Pike Corner, to be exact. And Rott Hall and the surrounding areas. I was informed that in the entire parish of St. Lucie, there are 3 bus sheds. 3. Not 3 bus stops, 3 bus sheds. Now, one would think in a parish where people have to wait 4 hours for a bus that you would provide, even though I know they're sponsored, so reaching out to corporate Barbados too, I guess, to build some bus sheds for the people living in these areas that have to wait long times for the bus, you see more bus sheds in areas that people only have to wait 5 minutes for a bus.
Right, right.
And in St. John, and in St. Lucie, and in St. Andrew, and St. Joseph, and St. Thomas, people don't have bus sheds, but yet they have to wait long hours for a bus. There's something wrong
with
that.
Wrong with that, because even the back of the hospital there, they had a bus shed there. If you left the hospital and go and catch a bus on the at the back there, they had a bus shed with a bench. They take out that ever since. And no, the bench there, the bus stand. They had some places they had a seat, but not the shed. They take out the seat, they go with it too. Many places I go nowadays where you can stand up and wait for a bus. The sun is so damn hot and music, not you can't sit down nowhere. You and you have to stand up on the sun. Mm-hmm. Some elders cannot stand too long on their leg, on their foot. They're turning all around, nowhere to sit down.
I'm hoping that the powers that be, I actually asked a question this morning, who's responsible? And I believe it's MTW, but I know that these bus sheds need sponsorship. And I would hate to think that corporate Barbados don't only do it in areas where you see a lot of people because it's marketing for you. Do it as part of your social responsibility too and help some people out in these areas, because these same people in St. Lucie, in St. John, St. Andrew, St. Thomas, St. Joseph, they shop in your stores. They use your services too. And I think they deserve a bus shed from you. So I'm hoping that you reach out and let people have a seat while they have to wait and shelter from the rain. We're going to take another call, but thanks very much. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ms. Hague.
Good afternoon.
I just wanted to zero in on the discussions as it relates to the virus in China and Barbados preparation and what we are doing, as I was intimately involved in the whole structuring of our ability to control and prevent the spread of communicable diseases. Now, the World Health Organization and the International Health Regulation 2005 Annex 1 Section 6B, core capacity requirements for designated airports, ports, and ground crossings, subsection 2D, states that designated airports shall provide assessment and, if required, quarantine of suspected travelers, preferably in facilities away from the point of entry. Now, that regulation has been adopted by the International Civil Aviation Organization as it relates to air travel, and in their Annex 9 facilitation, they have come up with a standard that all contracting states with airport authorities shall ensure the maintenance of public health, including human, animal, and plant quarantine at international airports. In this regard, in 2010, Barbados, the Grantley Adams International Airport, established a quarantine center that is away from the airport. This quarantine center is outfitted.
Where are you reading from, if you don't mind quoting the article that you are extracting this information?
The article is basically International Health Regulation.
Okay, okay.
2005.
Okay.
And then the other one is the Annex 9 to the ICAO Standards and Recommended Practices, that facilitation that controls aviation.
Right, okay.
And in this regard, Barbados came up and we developed standards, and we have standard operating procedures for Grantley Adams International Airport Health Authority. Mm-hmm. Now, in this document that we have, it tells you what happens on board the aircraft as to how the index case and how the rows before and after the index case, how they are treated and persons who may pass through that area. It speaks to when the aircraft lands and there's that case, the aircraft is not parked in the normal gate, but it is isolated. And how the passengers are dealt with and how they are taken to the quarantine center. It speaks to how they are landed. In other words, how customs and immigration will deal with these passengers, because they are not taken to the terminal as we know it. they are taken to the quarantine center, mm-hmm. and how they are processed by the customs, who, mind you, will be wearing special clothing, gloves, mm-hmm. masks, etc., because they are all outfitted, and how the airport, port health, will deal with these matters because they are in charge of the whole quarantine mm-hmm. center. Mm-hmm. Let me say to you that the quarantine center that is established at the Grantley Adams International Airport, and as I said, there's one also at the seaport, and these were very, very visible during the time of H1N1. Mm-hmm. And that is part, the quarantine center at Grantley Adams International Airport comes into the airport regulations, and it is part of the certification process for the airport so that we will be certain that there are systems in place. Because it's not only H1N1 and the virus that we're talking about, but it's things like chicken pox and so on that mm-hmm. they would have to handle.
Can I ask you, do you know about these suits that we see people wearing in China, the doctors and so on? We actually have those here. Do you know if we have
these? They should, because it's part in the regulations mm-hmm. and the customs and the immigration authorities had to provide that those outfits for their staff. Mm-hmm. And the Ministry of Health had to provide them for their staff. The chief medical officer mm-hmm. at that time, Dr. Joy St. John, mm-hmm. She and I, we worked together setting up this whole thing.
Okay.
And all the people were trained. And mm-hmm. they know of the uniforms that they have to wear.
You want to identify yourself, by the way? Are you?
Pardon?
Do you wish to identify yourself? Saying that you work together, I mean... If you want
to, is my name, and I was the retired director of civil aviation.
Okay, good. So the public is, because somebody's asking me if I know who this person is. Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
So and that's why I said I was instrumental in setting up this, because I had responsibility for mm-hmm. civil aviation in Barbados, mm-hmm. and this is implemented. So I am just bringing this up to let people know that we should not be now scrambling, mm-hmm. trying to put something in place. These things are already in place. Procedures are there. People are trained. The quarantine center is outfitted. All of these things are there. So when we identify that there is a case or anything mm-hmm. like that, the procedures are there. The people know how to treat the case.
Can I ask you, how many people can hold in the quarantine center at the airport, if you know?
I believe we can hold two people in the actual quarantine center, mm-hmm. but we have the facility to put up a tent and develop a triage
okay.
and all of that.
For the entire set
so
of passengers?
Because we have airplanes coming in and we have rows of nine. And if you're talking about two seats before and two seats after, that is four. And then the one with the vector is five. That's 45 people that you're basically talking about. So we got to be able to deal with 45 people.
No, what I'm talking about, a plane load of people come in here.
No, you wouldn't have to deal with a plane load of people because
Why?
The people are not spread all over the aircraft because the flight attendants, they know of containment.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find that an area in the aircraft will basically be cordoned off mm-hmm. so that people will not be walking through the area where the index cases.
But you're breathing in the same air. Forgive me for my ignorance. I'm asking, if I'm on a 747, there are 200-300 people there and someone is sneezing, coughing, etc., and they're not well, and we know that there's something going around, for example, whatever virus, because I don't want to stick it to just mm-hmm. corona,
something
that is out there. You're telling me that only the two people that are sick would be quarantined and not all of the people on the plane?
Exactly.
That's but how can that be?
Because
forgive me for being a layman, how can that be right?
So you're telling me that if you're in your house and you have the virus, that the people living next door to you...
No. The people next door in them hosts. I'm talking about being on the same aircraft, 300 people on an airplane, two people are sick with the virus, and it's an epidemic, it's probably maybe pandemic, we don't know. Everybody on that plane, I would imagine, before they get to go into your country to should be checked.
And hence the procedures are there. There are procedures that
okay.
persons will follow on that aircraft that are established by the International Civil Aviation Organization and the
mm-hmm.
World Health.
Mm-hmm.
And they will determine how they would treat the passengers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they believe that people have been exposed, that's the thing, exposed.
Mm-hmm.
If you are exposed, well, then they would treat you as a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will go to the quarantine center.
So basically, in closing, we want to assure Barbadians that measures have been put in place at the seaport and airport And there's no reason to panic, because these measures have been put in place for many years and they continue to be there. I want to thank you so much. Thank all of the callers. Thank you, Dennis Johnson, for looking after all things technical. I'll be back in maybe 2 weeks. And until then, God bless.